Blog Talk Radio.
I saw them run through my kitchen yesterday. It was quite amazing.
Yeah.
I'm going to actually put that picture on our Facebook page.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We got to get your chickens out there.
And thank goodness, like, I didn't, that the, you know, I the photo of them looking at the paella.
Yeah, the paella.
They were a little nervous about it because they saw some, couple of pieces of chicken in there, you know? Anyway.
Yeah, that's kind of rude.
Yeah, well, although that, I don't know what it is that, you know, what flipped out of the pan when I
well,
did you?
Yeah, we lost a shrimp or two there, but that's okay. We made it up with the lobster.
But that was a funny video then.
I enjoyed it very much. I enjoyed it very much. It was fun to watch it. And it was actually fun doing. I enjoyed you being with me in the kitchen. That was a lot of fun. That was a good time.
Yeah, I got a kick out of that. So tell us about, what was this with about this dirty, about the dirty ashtray? Tell us about that little story.
The dirty ashtray. Well, you know, we have a place in the city, the Half King. And when the cigarette ban went into effect 3 years or so ago, whenever it was, you know, there was a very, it was a very big to do, you know, at the time. People were really upset about it. So the day it happened, somebody just said to me, well, there you go. There'll never be another dirty ashtray on a table. And as soon as she said it, I just said to myself, want to bet? And I had this, I just got this idea for a dessert. And I just had it in the back of my mind for quite a while. And I wanted to do it. And finally, when we decided to do the stone turtle, as we put together the menu, I just said, you know, This is the place. This is the place to unveil the dirty ashtray. So that's where it came from.
Cool.
Yeah.
You want to describe to my audience what?
Well, the dirty ashtray. It looks like a dirty ashtray. It looks like an ashtray with a couple of cigar butts in it and some bottle caps and so forth. But what it is, it's actually a chocolate ashtray. And hidden underneath the chocolate is wonderful ganache and vanilla gelato. And you break it open, and the cigar butts are made out of meringue, and the bev nap is made out of a sugared wonton skin. And it's all edible. Everything on the plate is edible. And it's just a lot of fun. You know, it's one of those dishes we tried to go for a lot of wow factor here at the Stone Turtle. It was one of the things I really tried to do. I didn't want to do anything that anyone else is doing. You know, you see short ribs on everybody's menu now. I wouldn't do it. You know, things like that. We wanted to be unique and stand out. But with, as I say, it's everyday food just with a cool twist to it. And that's what we've done here. And I thought the dirty ashtray was a great example of that because it really is nothing more than a simple bowl of ice cream. It's just presented pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
one of the things that I had comment about is like that you can't, when you go in there, you can't say, oh, and what is the cuisine? There isn't any.
Yeah. It has been a little bit hard to,
yeah.
It has been a little hard to, stick a label on us. Peter Gianetti referred to us as a gastropub. I don't disagree with that. I think we're a bit more of a full-service restaurant than what comes to mind of a gastropub with most people.
Yeah.
But I guess for a lack of a better way of putting it, it's what it is because every dish is simply – they're just my signature dishes from over the years, you know, and it's just – it's a lot of fun. It's just taking things like a spring roll, but we make them surf and turf spring rolls. And, you know, we have oysters, but our oysters are screaming and so forth. And we just like to...
Well, that's the best way. It's like, you know, let's go into a couple of things. Like, for instance, the spring rolls. What's in the spring roll?
Well, the spring roll, we put – well, first I want to say all of our ingredients – we're very organic here. It's very important to me that we're – as green as possible. There are certain things, of course, that we have to do because we just can't afford certain things.
Right.
But for the most part, our menu is all organic, locally sourced. All of my meat, I get my chickens from Murray's. Anybody who's seen that documentary on HBO, that movie on HBO, about the autistic girl who went to Murray's, it's considered the most humane farm in the country.
Right.
Get my meat from there. I get my meat from a great place in Texas, Broken Arrow Ranch. You know, there are no chemicals, no nonsense, no antibiotics. Everything is organic, free range here. That's very important to me. So that having been said, our spring rolls are, we start with a basic spring roll mix, which is cabbage and, you know, some other little vegetables diced and sauteed. But we add baby arugula, filet mignon, and jumbo lump crab meat to the stuffing. Mm. So it turns it into a whole different, you know, a whole different dish when you're dealing with those ingredients. And that's one of my better sellers, actually.
That was good. You know, one of the tell us about the tuna. What you're calling a tartini?
Oh, the tuna tartini. Yeah. Well, it's that way because of they had a cool glass we serve it in. But the tuna, you know, I don't like to take too much credit. People always tell me, and I've always gotten reviewed, the best tuna tartare, the best tuna tartare. We need to give the tuna the credit. I simply buy the absolute best tuna that's available on the market, the highest grade, number one sashimi quality tuna, and we buy it fresh every day. And right there, when you start by doing business that way, you're going to deliver a good product. I don't really do a whole lot to the tuna. We make a citrus-based soy sauce here. We simply toss the tuna in a little bit of that. We put it on top of our own house-made guacamole and serve it with some house-made potato chips. So it's very simple, yet very elegant and sophisticated, and it definitely delivers, which I'm very happy about.
Oh, yeah. That was
yeah.
Yeah,
but the tuna, in fairness, the tuna deserves a lot of credit.
Oh, sure. You know, it was so good, I forgot to take a photo. I was so good. Oh, this is so good. We're both eating and going, wow, this is so great. This is so great. And then at the end, I'm going, shit, I forgot to take a photo. Oh,
and I'll
wow.
send you one. I have plenty of pictures of them. I love that presentation, and that is one of the ones in the restaurant. Like I said, we really try to go for some wow factor in every single dish.
Yeah. Yeah.
That one has a lot of wow factor the way it's presented.
Do you have are there any other, let's just talk about in terms of the appetizers, are there any other appetizers that I didn't have that it's another wow factor?
Well, I like to think they all do. The mango shrimp is pretty spectacular when it comes to the wow. We use beautiful white shrimp, and they're marinated in mango and sesame oil and Vietnamese chili peppers and lime. And then we grill them, and then we brush that on it as we grill them, so they come out with this beautiful, like, orangey glaze. And that's kind of our take on a shrimp cocktail.
Right.
You know, so we give it that little extra something. And, again, it just delivers that wow, you know, people, because they don't see this. It's not something you get or see anywhere. And because, you know what's fun? I get to create here with no limit. In my whole career, I've never understood when lots of chefs say things like, well, I'm an Italian chef, or I'm this chef, or I'm that chef. Because to me, that's like an artist saying, well, I paint with blue or I paint with yellow. I like to use food, all food. And I think what we have evolved into doing here at the Stone Turtle was simply our way of saying, you know what, there are no limits. We can mix and match whatever we want. The bottom line, if it's a great dish and the customer at the end of eating it is thrilled to pay for it, then we know we did a good job.
Oh, sure.
Right. So that's one of the things, because when you say, what do you call us? It's, you know, we've been called fusion, we've been called new American contemporary, we've been called gastropub.
What's interesting is when you walk in there, when you look around, it has the look of you're in a steakhouse. It's
right.
Got that look, and it's not.
We put a lot of, as you see when you're here, we put a lot of love and effort into the design of the place. We broke it up. We created many little environments.
Yeah.
We did things that people wouldn't normally think you would do out here on the island. We have a graffiti wall, which I love. You know, we put some couches right smack in the middle of our dining room and took away table space just to have a place where you could chill if you want. You know, we have enough TVs that if you want to see the game, you'll definitely see it. But not enough where they're obtrusive. You know, we have our fireplaces. We have our wine room. So we have a lot of different areas in the restaurant. I see where you're saying, because when you walk in, the first thing you see is the big bar. And that's because we really want people. I think my vision when we started this was Cheers meets the Quilted Giraffe. You know, that was my idea. That's how I saw the Stone Turtle. That's what I wanted it to be. I wanted it to be something for people who enjoy quality but I didn't want to price anyone out. I wanted people to come straight from the beach and feel comfortable, and I wanted people coming home from the opera to feel comfortable. I just wanted them all to know that everything we deliver on the table was going to be top quality. And it was also going to be fun.
Yeah.
Which is important to me.
I want to ask you a question. I'm curious about something. In terms of shrimp, it's like I go to the store, I want to get shrimp, and there's this thing, this shrimp, and this shrimp, and this shrimp. What's like, is any ideas or something? Like one is tiger or this
well,
or that?
Right.
Or, you know.
There are several different types of common shrimp that are always used. There's white, pink, the tiger shrimp, the black shrimp. Though the tiger and the black shrimp are generally the lesser quality. The pink and the white shrimp, for the most part, are the better quality.
Okay, so pink and white are better.
Yes, yeah. I tend to always, and it also depends how you're going to use them, where white sometimes is preferred over the pink and vice versa.
Uh-huh.
But for the most part, and don't get me wrong, not that there's anything wrong with tiger shrimp.
Right.
But if you were going to grade them and grade them fairly, if you cooked all three of them together, you know, and ate, tasted each one, you would taste a bit of a difference. You would see a bit of a difference where one is a little stringier than the other.
Right.
And what about,
let's say, buying shrimp, like the shrimp with the heads on?
Well, you know, that's one of those. It really depends on your own perspective with that. Usually when the shrimp are head-on, it means they're fresh and have never been frozen. 95% of all the shrimp you see have always been frozen.
Oh, okay.
The head-on usually indicates that they've never been frozen. The problem with that is you're paying by the pound.
Right. And
the head is equally as – it weighs as much as the body that you eat. So you're paying a lot of money for a lot of wow.
Right. Okay.
You know, now, if you were going to do maybe more of an upscale fancy, or if you wanted to impress, you go with the heads on because it's impressive. You don't see it often. But you're doubling your cost. Again, as a restaurateur,
right.
You know, you're instantly doubling your cost. When the customer sometimes doesn't care about that, the customer only cares about what they're getting, what are they eating, how full is their belly getting. You know, you have to be very conscious of that. Even when we do our great sashimi quality tuna steak, you know, I know places in the city that do 3.5-4 ounces, and you pay $30 and you eat and you feel like you had an appetizer, you get a little annoyed. So we give a beautiful 7-ounce piece, and that's important. I want people to always feel like they got great value. It's very important, and especially in this day and age. And I don't know other business, but I know our business. And I know in our business, when you open up that check presenter and you see the price, if your first reaction is you're happy to pay that price, then again, we've done a good job. You know, if you're sitting there muttering like, holy God, I'm paying all this, what did we eat?
Yeah.
You know what? You're not going to be around long.
Yeah.
People say to me all the time, aren't you worried? The recession? Why are you opening a restaurant now? You know, plenty of people are doing great business, and it's the people that are good at what they do. You know, there's still plenty of business to be had. There's still plenty of people going out to eat. There's still plenty of money to be made, but you have to be on your game. Because I think in this day, especially in this day, if you're no good, if you're a fraud, people will see right through you quick. You're not going to get the return customers, and then you're dead in the water.
Yeah. That's true. Now let's go into a couple of other things, and then I want to talk about the knives.
Oh, okay.
Now I had the opportunity to. Well, one of the things that I cooked, and one that was funny.
The paella.
Which is great. That's.
Paella is it's classically a it's actually, I believe it's a Portuguese dish. I know probably some of your fans are going to say, no, it's Spain. No, but I believe it's actually a Portuguese dish in origin. But basically what it is, as we cook together, it's a blending of lots of different beautiful ingredients and cooking them just right. So it all comes together in just this beautiful, rice dish. When you get right down to it, that's all it is. It's a simple rice dish. But with that combination of the shellfish and the chicken and the smoke from the sausage and the olives and the peppers, the roasted peppers and the saffron and the rice and the chicken stock and the butter. And do you remember in your lesson, why did we add the butter?
For the taste? No.
To enhance weight gain.
Weight gain, right, yes. I remember that.
We always throw in a dash of butter to enhance the weight gain.
Yeah.
But again, it's cooking a dish like that properly.
Yeah.
Using fresh ingredients every day. And that's how you build business. Because no matter when we serve that dish, everything in it is beautiful. It's lovely. People are pleased to eat it. Again, this is what you want to achieve, or at least me as a chef. Forget about as the owner, but as the chef. That's what I want to make sure happens. So the paella, it's one of our best sellers. And I just love the whole presentation and the cast iron pot and all that.
We even
do it, as I showed you, we have these beautiful large pans where we'll do a meal for a group meal, and I'll actually come out and serve it. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. Food should be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I had, again, the unusual, like you wouldn't expect, the chicken and a waffle.
Oh, right, the apricot chicken with the cheddar waffle. Yeah. Well, that was like everything else. We took an idea, which is a classic fried chicken and a waffle, which is very classic down south, and we put our spin on it. So instead of making fried chicken, we mixed some apricots and chipotles, and we roasted the chicken, keep it a little healthier. And then we took a beautiful malt waffle recipe and added white and yellow cheddar cubes to it, which makes for a great presentation. And then just to turn the whole thing upside down, we added some sautéed bok choy under the chicken. And it sounds like one of those where you just threw a bunch of ingredients up in the air, but I think you'll agree, it all comes together very nicely on the plate. It's a very unusual but very good dish.
Oh, yeah. That was good, too.
Yeah, I'm very pleased with that.
And, of course, right. I couldn't have everything, is there another signature dish you want to throw in to talk about?
Sure. I'll tell you. You know what my favorite is?
What?
And it's the reason I actually put it on the menu. My mom's Greek, my pop is Irish, but growing up, I was an Italian food junkie. Spaghetti and meatballs, lasagna, chicken parmesan, pizza, you know, I just can't get enough of that. And to this day, it's still my comfort food. You know, it's what I make when I need some just me time and some please time. So I had gotten, at the Half King, I was using these beautiful organic wild boar sausages that I get from Broken Arrow Ranch in Southwest Texas, which is a fascinating place. I tell you, to all of your listeners, if they're ever interested in venison and game, they should really look at Broken Arrow Ranch, look it up online and see what they do and how they do it, because it's incredible. As I explained to you, Merle, it's some of the best game I've ever tasted. It's their unique way of harvesting the animals. The animals never go into any stress whatsoever. For the most part, the animal never even knows it dies, so it never produces those amino acids that make game gamey. So the meat that you get from there is amazing. So we were using these sausages at the Half King, and one day I was having a bad day, and I said, you know what, we're going to make lasagna, and we're going to use these sausages. And we made a lasagna, you know, my typical 7-layer lasagna, and we ate it for about 3 days. And I just said, when I was making this menu, I said, you know what? There's one of the comfort dishes I want to put on the menu here. So we did add that. And truly, it's probably the one dish, although probably lacking in sophistication and wow factor from all the others, it's probably my favorite dish on the menu. Mm. Yeah.
I guess
yeah.
The next time I go out there, I'll have to...
Oh, it's really heaven. It really is a nice piece of. We have this awesome peasant bread that we use. You take a piece of that and and you sit there and you just sop it all up. It's good stuff. It's my favorite thing on the menu. And again, everything there being made fresh here, you know, we just finished our marinara sauce today, just now. You know, it's been cooking for 7 hours.
Wow.
You know, and we won't use that until tomorrow. So it'll be perfect. Red sauce is always better the second and third day. Red sauce, always, you let it cool. You let those flavors marry and get together. And the next day when you heat them up, you can just smell it. It's like, oh, yeah. You know, those 15 ingredients turned into one amazing ingredient. So, again, you can see where my passion lies with the red sauce.
I don't suppose you deliver, do you?
For you,
anyway.
No problem.
Yeah,
no, you know what? But we have been getting a lot of requests. It's something that I really didn't want to get into here at the Stone Turtle. That's why we built it as beautifully as we did, because it's really meant to be about the whole place. It's really meant to be about, you know, people always ask me, what'd you have to name the Stone Turtle? The truth is, it's more of, you know, chill like a stone turtle, you know, relax. Don't be in a hurry. Enjoy.
Uh-huh.
You know, where does a stone turtle go? It goes nowhere. You know, just sit there. Right. Just sit
it's
there.
Slower
and
than shit.
That's actually how I got the name. Somebody had complimented me on my tan.
Uh-huh.
This was a few years ago, and we were sitting around my nephew's pool, and I just said, so what you're saying is I lay here every day and do nothing better than everybody, right? So one of my friends just picked up on that and said, yeah, you lay there like a brick, like a rock, and let on. And then just out of nowhere, I just said, yeah, like a stone turtle. And as soon as I said it, I just, that's it. That's the name of the restaurant.
Well, before you talk about the knives, what was that? You run into the kitchen and you touch something on the wall. What was that?
Oh, all of our artwork in the restaurant is all by urban artists and, you know, pretty well-known guys. One of them is Sean Griffin, and he did our graffiti mural, and he did a few other things. He did one of the turtles on one of the walls. But in my kitchen, he did what he considers his tag, his skull and his artwork right there. So it's kind of become the mascot of our kitchen. So whenever all the cooks go behind the line to start their shift, we all tap the skull and pay homage. Absolutely.
That's pretty cool.
You always gotta pay homage to something. You always gotta stay a little bit humble. You know, you always gotta give a little something to the gods. Keep today good. Keep today a good day.
Now let's get into I have a couple of questions.
Go ahead.
Just as a chef question, in terms of cooking. When you cook lobster, can it overcook?
Yeah.
And what happens if it overcooks?
The worst thing in the world is overcooked shellfish. For the most part, once it is overcooked, it's garbage. It's going to be tough. It's going to be rubbery. It's not going to be that beautiful, pleasant. And what you see in most restaurants, people always overcook the shrimp. You really, really don't need to cook them long. You know, they should be in the heat, you know, 3 minutes or so, you know,
right.
5 minutes the most. You'll see their edges curling and they're drying out and they're losing their moisture. They become very, very rubbery. Lobster, most people overcook lobster. Most people overcook lobster.
I'm asking that for a particular reason.
Okay.
After I left you, I went over to Jordan to get some lobster.
Right.
And, you know, so I got some coals, and I said, and they said, you want it steamed? And I said, you know, do you charge more? I said, no. I said, I figured, what the hell? Let them steam it. Less work for me to do when I get home.
Right.
Well, it was really tough eating. One of them was like, the claw meat was like dry, and the tail was rubber. And I'm going, I'm still chewing and chewing and chewing. I couldn't wait to call them for, you know, to say, why is it like this? And they'd say, and tell me that I cooked it incorrectly. And then I would say, well, you guys cooked it. Oh, the owner, guy, Steve. Oh, he like.
Steve Jordan, yeah, I know him well. You know, I know them as a very high quality place. I can't speak on this, but you know what? I can say this, and it's one of my reasons why I don't like to do takeout to go food. The food keeps cooking, especially once you seal it inside that little takeout container.
Okay.
So if you take a lobster that had just been steamed,
yeah,
unless you chill it down and stop its cooking, it keeps cooking. And now when you place it in a to-go container and you seal it in there, and by the time you get it home, it keeps cooking. You know, now the temperature may be going down,
yes,
but it's still cooking. And that's one of the reasons I try very hard to stay away from doing delivery and takeout, because it's very difficult to get food to someone's house the same way I can get it to the table in the restaurant.
Right. Okay.
Especially things that you take for granted. French fries. I can't imagine there's ever been a great delivered French fries.
Yes.
Ever. You know, I don't care who it is, where it is, it's just not the same.
Yeah, that's one food you can't.
Excuse me.
Yep, you got to eat right away. That's the only time it'll be crunchy. That's it.
See, now what I do with my lobster is we actually undercook our lobster. I put my cooks through a real test with our lobsters, because we don't cook them whole body and all, because the claws are a different thickness than the tail.
Right.
So we cook them at different times and at different temperatures for different times. And we undercook them where you still probably couldn't eat it the way we cook it, because then we poach it in butter. And that's also what helps our lobster be so buttery and flavorful and juicy and moist, because it's the way we go back and...
Oh, is that your cell phone?
It's somebody's cell phone.
Oh, okay.
It is not mine.
Oh, okay.
I have no idea where it is.
Okay. Okay, so let's... let's hear the music. Would you like to dance?
Oh, you never know what's going to happen in a restaurant, right?
I know. I want to kind of get into the thing with the knives.
Okay. Well, you know, you can buy a Volkswagen car and you can buy a Rolls Royce. They're both cars and they both basically do the same exact thing. One is considerably cheaper than the other.
Right.
My knives are handmade knives from Japan, made by a place, the House of Masamoto, probably one of the most reputable knife makers in the world. They can be very expensive, especially when they're done to order for you, specifically for you. They can get expensive. You can go to, there's a great place in the city called Corin, down on the corner of Church and Warren, I believe it is, something like that. But it's KORIN. But they sell these knives and other high-end Japanese knives. I just feel it's a superior knife to any of the more traditional European or American versions of knives. I just think the steel, the handle, everything about it is just on a very high end. And as you saw, they have different knives for different jobs, just like the Europeans and the others do. But it's a little more complex. And I just think overall, for me, it's a much better knife. Because to me, that everything starts right there. Everything starts with my knife.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't have the absolute best cutting tool, I can't cut that strawberry to look like a flower or a rose.
Right.
You know, and which is very important when you're trying to do more upscale things. So I don't, when people ask me, what kind of knife should I get? Listen, there's a million great knives out there. If you're an everyday person and you cook now and then, or even if you're even more enthusiastic about it, there are plenty of great knives out there. Globe are great, Wusthof, Henkel, those are all great knives, the ones you see in Macy's and everything. They're terrific, you know. I just prefer the higher quality of the knives that I use.
Yeah, and you should have like more than one type of knife.
Well, sure. I mean, anytime, again, for the more serious cook, you have your utility knife, which is your base knife, but you know, you need a certain knife to cut certain vegetables certain ways. If you're using fish, you may need two or three different knives to cut fish. And, you know, if you're breaking down meat or getting a little more complex with roasts and things like that, you need other type of butchering knives.
Right.
Because they don't all just simply translate to another. You know, one knife may be absolutely worthless in breaking something down because it's just not meant to be used that way. You wind up damaging the knife or you're chipping the blade and, you know, things like that. So, yeah, there is a very definitive list of things that each knife should be used for. But, again, that goes across all of cutlery, you know, whether it's European or the Asians or however you look at it. The Asians are a little bit more involved. As one of my sous chefs once said, the Japanese were making knives long before there was ever a France or Germany.
Yeah.
And I always kind of agreed with that. I was actually brought up as an Asian chef, not like cooking in an Asian restaurant, but in the Quilted Giraffe. The Quilted Giraffe, the technique that we used in the kitchens were based much more on an Asian philosophy in a kitchen than in a European philosophy. And I tend to still be that way now.
Is that still open? Or is that closed?
It was bought by Sony. The Quilted Giraffe, it was the first restaurant that ever got 3 4-star reviews in the New York Times. The legendary Who's Who, Barry Wine, it's amazing. But they were bought by Sony because they were one of the most – the Quilted Giraffe was a very popular restaurant in Japan. So when the Sony executives bought the building that it was in, they pretty much bought all of that, and they made Barry the private chef for the Sony Club for quite a few years there, and that was only open to Sony executives. So he did okay for himself.
Ah.
But no, it's no longer there, but it was a great restaurant, that's for sure.
But you still have another restaurant, which is...
Well, we do, yeah. We have a place in the city that we run. We don't own it. We own the Stone Turtle. But we run the Half King over in Chelsea, which is owned by Sebastian Younger, the author of The Perfect Storm, and Nanette Burstein, who's got a new movie coming out, Going the Distance, with Drew Barrymore. It's coming out in a week or two. And her husband, Scott Anderson, he's a war correspondent, writer for The Times. We work with them at the Half King, and we're about to celebrate our 10th year anniversary there, as a matter of fact.
Oh, yeah? When?
Yeah. I believe it's in September. I believe in September. We're having a big party. I don't know the exact dates. I know we were just all having a meeting about it.
Yeah.
But the Half King is a... It was the little engine that could, you know. It just turned into a real monster over the years, and now it just keeps chugging along. And what was once a quiet little street on the west side, but now with the High Line going in and the meatpacking district and everything else, it's a whole different neighborhood now. But the Half King keeps moving right along, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'll have to get there only because I know I was there, and like the brain is going. And what was I was there for? I mean,
right,
and I know
right.
I wasn't there because, like, oh, you know, I just hit it. Okay.
You remembered why?
No, I have a name that just rings a bell to me. Nora Lawler.
Oh my goodness. Nora mentioned you today in an email. Yes, yes, yes. Nora mentioned you today in an email to us because she saw your blog, and she sent us a note saying, I've known her for years.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm connecting, that it must have something that had to do with her.
What a small world. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Nora's a terrific lady.
Yeah, she's sending me her list of clients. I could see, when I go to restaurants, I kind of look. I always want something special.
Right.
When I'm writing about it, and
right.
not just because you know, like not to fill my face.
Right. You
know?
Right.
Yeah, and also the other thing is when I'm going, as you see, like I don't say I never. critiques, so to speak, because it's like, wait, this is my taste.
Right.
My taste in food, you know. I mean, there's certain things where I've run into a restaurant, let's say the chicken comes out raw or there's, you know,
right.
or something that needs something that needs to be said.
Right. That's a different ballgame.
But that's
or
a
if something gets, yes, that's a different
yeah.
ballgame. And it's something I always like to point out to people, although we really never have much of a problem. But, you know, there's a, listen, I don't particularly like everything. Doesn't mean I don't recognize it when it's made with quality
right.
or if it's done well, you know, or just, hey, it's just not for me. It gets a little frustrating sometimes, and this is for the entire restaurant industry, when customers sometimes, you know, oh, this sucks. Sucks? This does not suck. Now, maybe you don't like it, and that's okay, you know, but, you know, it doesn't suck. Now, again, you know, you're being subjective, and sometimes people can be a little problematic sometimes. Sometimes people come in and they're set on having a bad time before you've done anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, I'm very lucky. I don't have to deal with that very much. We're pretty good at what we do, so we don't get any problems. But if we ever do have one, what can we do to make you happy? Anything
yeah.
you'd like. You know,
well,
we try to
let people know. I would also like, what about it sucked? Like,
right, well... That's the one, you know, sometimes you're amazed how often sometimes, I mean, the stories I could tell you, I've been in the business now professionally for 33 years. The stories I could tell you, you know, sometimes people don't want to pay. Sometimes
yeah.
people are just not nice people. You know, you serve enough meals and you see everything once. So... it's kind of amusing.
Yeah.
You know, you see all these blogs. I would love it if all us chefs and restaurateurs started writing blogs about customers. Let's turn
hey,
it around.
That's something.
You
know,
I remember at the Half King a few years back on Yelp, someone complained and they said the tea was nothing more than Lipton tea. I got really angry at that because I had already been the chef there for a few years and whatever. There had never been a bag of Lipton tea on the premises, ever. You know, so again, if you don't like it, it's okay, but don't say things that you just because you think it. It's you couldn't be more wrong. You know, you asked us what tea it was, we told you, and then you wrote that it was something else. And to me, that's wrong. That's very wrong. You know, but
you know, it's funny when it comes to tea, you have to know if you don't know what you're drinking, if you don't know like the type of tea. And I would say it's like. When someone, like Lipton tea. Now, when I, that's a certain, like, and I guess it's like orange pekoe tea, I guess.
Right.
When they talk about that. There's a particular, and it's like that. It's like, what if I have that, I can't have that. It's like, because that brings back,
right.
growing up, I'm sick, and my mother makes me have tea. And it's the only tea. It's that taste. And you put as much sugar as possible, and you put the honey, the lemon, anything to cover it up.
Right.
So
right.
when I'm drinking tea right now, if you got rooibos tea, give it to me.
you know what's funny? It's funny you say the honey with the tea. You know what I do here at the Turtle,
what?
Which I've been so thrilled. I never expected this reaction. When people ask for honey, I actually have honeycomb, you know, bee honeycomb.
Really?
Yeah, and that's all I use. And I break off a little piece, and I put it in this little beautiful little dish, and I present it that way. I cannot tell you how many comments we've gotten just on that. We do a fig and a prosciutto appetizer sometimes, and I'll put the bee honeycomb on the dish, and that's all you'll hear about. That's all we hear about. You know, I mean, it's the finest prosciutto in the world, Parma ham, and customers are just like, oh, my God, we love the bee honey. It's like, great. Okay, cool. Well, you know what? It's going to give you something to remember and tell your friends. So,
oh,
cool.
Sure. Okay,
yeah.
got another cooking question.
Hit me.
I have some apricots in the refrigerator that, like, okay, it's time to eat them up.
Okay.
And how do you think that would go? Okay, I know it's great with chicken. What else could I? It does.
Grow great with fish. Especially
okay.
white fish, you know, whiter fleshed fish.
Okay, don't have any fish.
Okay. Chicken could go great with veal.
I'm going to throw to you.
Could go amazing with pork.
If you say, okay. Now, I happen to have, I have some sausage.
Okay.
That would work?
Sure, that could be very interesting, actually.
Okay.
What kind of sausage? Just regular old Italian sausage?
No, I just got some sausage from a company that makes ham.
Okay.
And I wanted to try that. And,
sure, that could actually be very interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, I have to tell you something that I did do. This was really cool. I had taken some avocado, I mashed it up, and I had gotten olive oil infused with Persian lime.
Very nice.
So instead of adding mayonnaise, which I do, I whipped it up with a little bit of that. Then I also got some white balsamic vinegar, honey ginger.
Beautiful.
And I threw a little of that in, and I made that as a salad dressing.
That sounds excellent.
I'll have to bring it to you for you to try.
I was just going to say, why don't you bring that over? I'll throw together the salad, and we'll sit down and go over some more cooking questions.
I got to bring you these things I got. Green Gate Olive Oil Company, and it's absolutely amazing the things that they have. And maybe you can answer this question because I was trying to find out. Now, I'm allergic to balsamic vinegar. I've never seen white balsamic vinegar. This is the first time I've heard of it. So I tend to not have balsamic vinegar, but white balsamic vinegar. Now, why is it?
White balsamic vinegar, there really is no such thing as white balsamic vinegar. It's really just been modified vinegar, and they've given it a name. It's really nothing more than that. You look at the label, take a real good look at it. It's just a higher quality vinegar, like Heinz white vinegar. You know why chefs like to use Heinz white vinegar? The acid level's high, almost double of what any common generic brand would be. And that's why it has such a great vinegar taste. White balsamic vinegar, they've started with a great vinegar to begin with, and they've modified it in certain ways and added sugar and this and that to create this white balsamic vinegar. But it's a lot of fun, and it's different because no one has heard of it, you know. And you see, that's another thing in our industry. When I started out as a kid, you know, a portobello or a shiitake mushroom were about as exotic as could possibly be. You know, now with the explosion of the culinary world, with the Food Network, with the corner bodegas having, you know, it's very hard to keep producing things that people haven't seen now, you know, and people are constantly kicking over rocks trying to find the next great ingredient, when the reality is, you know, I think maybe I see maybe two things a year that I've never seen before that make me go, whoa, that's pretty cool, you know. But if I even see two things in a year right now, you know, it's been a good year. It's like, wow, it's been a very new year, very productive year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where a lot of those kind of things start coming in, and you even see in some of the better supermarkets, you can see purple or orange cauliflower and all these different colors. Because, you know, the growers have learned how to manipulate the soils and the hybrids, and they cross them. And, you know, it's still just cauliflower.
Right,
you know, whether
right.
it's dyed or, you know, whether it's grown to be orange or purple or white or whatever color the grower is trying to get, it's still just cauliflower.
Yeah, I was at an organic farm way on the island. I don't know if you know the name. For some reason, I'm getting this, like, an Asian name to it. But it was amazing. I never saw so many colored tomatoes or colored this and colored that.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because, like, you know, I took it home and I was in, like, does it each have a different – tomatoes, on the color, I think they have different tastes.
Yeah. Well, that's a great example. Again, when I was a kid, you know, there were two, three tomatoes. You know, now my goodness, there are teardrops and cherries and there's yellows and there's reds and there's orange and there's vine ripe and, you know, and it goes on and on and heirloom and 4x5s and beefsteak and, you know, it goes on and on and on and on. And again, I think this is just the results of marketing because it keeps pushing the envelope. Keep, you know, what's new, what's new, what's new? What else you got? What else you got? You know, well, if we could get a tomato to grow in this shape, hey, here's a teardrop tomato, you know. You know, it's true, but it's still just a tomato.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes just a regular old, right off the vine, not in a hothouse tomato, you can't get much, you know. Nature had it right the first time, you know. It really did.
Yeah, that's true. It's like the comment, the beefsteak tomato. Get a good beefsteak tomato, and that's
beefsteak tomato. A little bit of salt, a little bit of olive oil. You're ready to go. You're ready to go.
Yeah, that's very true.
Absolutely.
But, you gotta go cook, don't you?
I do have a rather busy Friday night getting ready to start.
They're waving at you. Greg, get your ass in here. Come on, get off the damn phone.
I didn't even realize the time had gone by, but yeah, I'm 10 minutes from opening, so I think I better go address the troops.
Okay.
But it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Sure. I might have you on again sometime, like, you know, to do something, maybe some chef talk.
Anytime. Anytime, Ro. I'd love to join you. Anytime.
Or talk to you about some of the recipes I'm using, and, you know, you can give me some ideas or things like that. Or maybe I give you some ideas.
Maybe so. Hey, I get ideas from everywhere. I learn from my dishwashers. I am a big believer in that. I try to learn all the time. You know, it's what you learn after you know it all that really counts.
Yep, that's true.
Right?
Well, have a great evening, and thanks for calling in.
Thanks a lot.
www.thestoneturtlerestaurant, is that it?
Right, thestoneturtlerestaurant.com.
Yeah.
And it's at facebook.com/stoneturtle.
Okay.
Okay?
Got it.
All right, thanks a lot, Merle. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Stone Turtle. The Stone Turtle is actually it's located at, if you happen to be in New York, it's 4160 Austin Boulevard in Island Park. That's a section of Long Island called Island Park. And now I'm hungry. What can I do? Well, I'm going to take a let's see. You know me. The show. I think I'm getting tired. This is horrible. Hair. Yes. It's not on Broadway anymore. Well, can you do? But I'll play the song that I like. And then in the meantime, I'm going to see if I can call up John Greco to talk about the gelato. So hang on there and listen.
We starve, look at one another, short of breath, walking proudly in our winter coats, wearing smell from laboratories, facing a dying nation of moving paper fantasy, listening for the new toll lies with supreme visions of lonely tunes. Somewhere inside something there is a rush of greatness. Who knows what stands in front of our lives? I fashion my future.
sun shining in, is it then it makes it hotter in the house? Oh, I don't think they meant that. Well, I was trying to get, as it turns out, John Greco, who's the owner of the cafe, the gelato, he says they're really busy right now, so I'll have to get him another time. The thing I really kind of want to get into is, they have like 100 flavors. Like, how do you come up with flavors for gelato, you know, all kinds of flavors? And since especially it's not like ice cream, you know, it's a different kind of thing. But we'll get him to call in. Okay, so in the meantime, so I got there's a company called Belkin, Belkin, and they make some really great products for the computer. So I'm trying to set it up. Okay, here's my dilemma. I have a netbook, and the netbook has the built-in video thing and microphone, and that's what I want to use on Skype, because my regular one doesn't have that kind of thing, and I don't feel like setting up another. Yeah, okay. Well, you got it. Okay. So now they sent me I had to get a router. They sent me a router. And I went through the directions and plugging and doing whatever, and the router, it still registers amber and not green. And so I am connected to the internet, but according to my netbook in another room, it's not happening, and I don't know how to make the light green. Yes, in case you're thinking, well, you know, didn't I call tech support? Yeah, well, I tried doing that. I almost went hysterical because I'm probably going to be laughing at this new TV program that's coming on. I think it's called Sourced Out or something. And so I'm talking to this woman, and I'm going, where am I calling? And she says, India. Now, first of all, I couldn't understand what she was saying, only a little bit because in terms of the accent, but more so because she wasn't talking loud enough. But then she kept asking me questions. You know, it's like they must have a something in front of them that says, if the person says this, click this, or if the person says this, click this. Because, you know, she kept asking me the same questions, and I kept answering her, and she would then ask me a question, you know, and then I couldn't take it anymore. So I said, never mind, you know, I'll just see if I can call the company. So I'm hopefully... at some point, the company will call me back, because I just kind of want to get this done. But when I take this on the road, I'll be taking the show on the road with me, and I have some other little wonderful things that I'm going to check out. A wireless mouse, which is going to be great. I know. People got used to using their little fingers to... You know what I'm talking about on the computer, on laptops and whatever. You use your finger and move things. And I hate it. I want a mouse. I want to just click. I want to click and, you know, the whole bit with that. That's all I want to do. And the mouse I have with my computer is plugged in. But I'll use that. I'll use their mouse when I go away. And they also sent me a mini surge protector kind of thing. I think you can plug in like four things. So you plug it into the wall, and you can plug in your computer, but also, and this is I know that I would need, like, for instance, I need to, my phone, so I have to, plug in and with the battery to recharge my phone. And then I also have I always take my little camera with me, so I got to recharge the battery. So this will all happen, you know, while I'm hanging in the hotel or whatever. So that's pretty cool. Or of course, like, well, I suppose I could like bring it to, I could like bring it into the airport. A lot of airports, like, you could have it plugs, and then you plug a whole bunch of things in and recharge everything. And that's cool, way cool. So yeah, I'm hoping to use it soon. And let's see, what else did I hear? Waiting for the bagels. But I had talked about the bagels from Norfolk, and now I want that. He said they'd send them up to me, special delivery. Not like, oh goodness, yes, UPS again. Oh no. All right, this time, so in the last month, I've gotten 2 crushed boxes from UPS. This was a cool one. I'm waiting for something, and I'm tracking it and whatever. And I went out for a couple of hours or so, come back, and I'm looking. There's nothing there. Okay. And so I go online, track it. It says it was delivered at the front door, and I guess it didn't require a signature. And I'm, you know, I don't know what they're talking about. I'm looking around, but I had gotten this weird message on my machine, and I thought it was like the wrong number, saying something about something at a location which was like around the corner down the block from me. You know, and so eventually I decided I'm going to go and just, like, see what that is, if there was an incident that happened or, you know, I wasn't sure. Well, I do that, and there is the UPS cart, and it's open. It's food. As it turned out, although things, like, had to be refrigerated, everything was stuff like that, you know, cured or something like that. And so I was able to salvage it. But I'm guessing, I mean, UPS, I don't think anybody took it off the steps of my house. I mean, if they took it off, I can't imagine someone going to the steps of my house, open it up, see food there, and say, I don't want it. I mean, come on, really? My guess is that it was a similar address, but on the parallel street, and they were bringing other stuff, and they probably, you know, didn't look at it enough, and that's where they put it. But, yes, UPS. What unsatisfactory, I forgot what I wrote. something poor service that I write. So anywho, that's been something during my week. But there was sausages. As I was commenting about some sausages in there, see if I could cook it up with apricots, and let's see, maybe a little sugar. Not sure yet. What I'll use with it. So yeah, I'm getting hungry. I'm getting hungry. There's an opportunity. I'm going to be going to Rochester. I had gone to an event regarding Rochester and the Erie Canal. They have these boats, like houseboats, and you can rent the houseboat. And I may do this, rent a houseboat, and go on the canal for like 2 days or something, and stop at different places along the Erie Canal. That'll be a first. My concern interested in somebody helping me on and off the boat. Yeah. But that sounds great. I hope I could do it because it's, you know, one of the my list of, if I could do it, you can do it anyway. That's, you know, that list as opposed to a shit list, you know. And also going up there, it's Susan B. Anthony's birthday. I guess it wouldn't be her anniversary. Susan B. Anthony's birthday, I believe. And they're having a big bash, something all day at the Susan B. Anthony house in Rochester. I inquired. Susan won't be there. And neither will her dollar coins. But I will be there to cover the event. And yes, and I'm bringing along Esther and Eunice said that they wanted. Yes, I understand. I will bring you. I'll bring you. Wow, man. We'll be probably going. We'll probably be going on JetBlue. That'll be interesting because I'm going to have pictures of Esther and Eunice with a flight attendant. I know her. We all heard about that whole thing. I don't even know what to make of it. I don't, you know, like I have no positive, negative, or whatever. The reality is, I don't know what happened on the plane. I don't know what really happened. You know, yeah, there's all kinds of back and forth things about, you know, in terms of going on a plane, the size of the luggage and things like that, and, you know, carry-ons. And, well, when I'm going and I'm doing a carry-on, I learned, I learned how to put my clothes in the carry-on using Ziploc bags, large Ziploc bags, and so I can get in a week's worth of clothing into one carry-on bag, and then I take my personal bag, and my personal bag is what I usually like. I'll carry maybe like my computer or something like that, and I can just, you know, I realize, like, people bring on a lot of stuff. But it is the choice. I mean, like, what people, you know, actually what you can evidently can get away with. Let's say if you come on and they say it's too big, we have to check it. Well, they're not necessarily checking it saying you got to pay the $25. They're checking it that, you know, in cargo, and you notice how so much of it comes off after when you get off the plane. Well, yeah, listen, that's a hoot to do. You get off the plane, you have your luggage, you don't even have to go to the carousel, you know. Well, anyhow, but then when I go out to California, have to figure out what to do. I wanted to, UPS. Oh, right. I don't know that I'll do it, considering UPS. I was going to check out to see what I can send directly to the hotel that I'll be staying at. And I might do some of that in terms of some things that I'll be taking that will weigh down my bag or that, you know, stuff like that, because I'm going off to the Travel Media Showcase and doing the 15-minute, speed dating with people from tourism. And I'll see how I can handle that. Well, let's see what we got. Time, a little time before Melissa calls in. pull down the screen. Come on. Come on. Come on. Yes, computer. Okay. Okay, let's go. Oh, it's doing this loading thing. So it's, I want to, oh, here's, I like this song. What can I say? So let's play the song in honor of the...
She may be the face I can't forget, the trace of pleasure or regret, maybe my treasure or the price I have to pay. She may be the song the summer sings, maybe the chill the autumn brings, maybe 100 different things within the measure of a day. She may be the beauty or the beast, maybe the famine or the feast, may turn each day into a heaven or a hell. She may be the mirror of my dreams, a smile reflected in a stream. She may not be what she may seem inside her shell.
Okay, am I unmuted? We'll try again. I am unmuted. Isn't that great? Okay. And we're going to do some more, a little more music. Let's see what I got here. From the same play, same movie rather. Here we go.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gonna stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away, and I know, I know. Sunshine when she's gone, only darkness every day. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away, anytime she goes away.
Love that movie on Notting Hill. I like I constantly watch it because I think part of it for the music and part because it's the romance, the nonviolence, it's really crap on television. Hopefully we'll get some new shows. It's Friday. I don't know what's on Friday. But, let's see what else I can chat about. I got some interesting info about, right now the IFAF, let's see, it's the flag, international flag football tournament is going on. I think there was some games today. Team USA, let's see. Steve had told me, he got info. Team USA won one game. They lost, let's see, they lost, it's funny, they lost again, lost to Canada. But won the game against Sweden. I don't know if they're playing a third game today. They tend to do that. I don't know how. Yeah. So that, to me, that's so crazy. It's like, well, I don't know. I mean, it's like I suppose like tennis players. They can go on and on playing it in just one game, I guess the games are a lot. Yeah, games are shorter than if you're playing tackle football also. So that's happening, and the Team USA has some of the Sharks players that took the gold as well. But this time, like last time they went, 2008, they were all New York Sharks players. And this time, there were mostly New York Sharks players, but there's also players from the DC Divas, a couple from there, one player is from Pittsburgh, the Pittsburgh Passion they are, and one of the players from the Chicago Force, who actually is a former New York Shark player. So I'll find out how that's going on. And, what can I tell you? They respond.
Thank you for calling JetBlue. May I help you?
My cousin was telling me you guys have extra leg room.
Uh-huh. We have extra leg room as compared to a normal coach seat.
Okay. If I don't have an extra leg, can I use that room for something else?
No, that is not what the extra leg implies. We took out one whole row of seats, and that gave the rest of those rows a couple of extra inches of leg room.
Ah.
I understand what you mean. The words extra leg imply that, but it has nothing to do with having an extra leg.
I'm a pretty literal person.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be taking it very literally.
I guess a little too literally.
Okay. Is there anything else I can help you with?
I think that's it. You've been pretty helpful.
Thanks for calling JetBlue.
Dear traveler, stretch out. We now have the most legroom in coach. Visit us at JetBlue.com. Sincerely, JetBlue. Based on average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines.
Okay. This is going to be very awkward. I have to go answer the door for another package. Okay. But I'll bring it to the door. And I believe it's UPS. He's going to laugh because I'm walking around in my T-shirt and underwear. Okay, so hang on. Okay, now, first of all, to take this and just say hello. Just say hello.
Hello?
Yes, say hello. No one's going to talk. You're on the radio right now. Just talk. Oh, just talk. Talk about UPS. Yeah, no, go ahead. What's your name?
Fernando.
Fernando. Oh, okay. Thank you for delivering my package to UPS.
Probably.
Oh, it's tortilla chips. This is going to be great. Something more for me to eat.
Thank you.
Yes, and this time the box is not crushed, and it came to the correct address. Did you happen to deliver a box the other day of food? It was perishable.
Yeah.
Okay, because I had something. It was very weird. I tracked it, and it said it was put at the front at the door. And then, as it turned out, because of the phone call I got, it was around the corner in front of the apartment building. I don't know. Okay.
<All right.
laughs> Okay, thanks anyway. So just so you know, by the way, yeah, we're on the radio, on the internet radio right now. I'm doing a show. Okay. Bye. Okay, so let me get this package in here. Okay, it's food. Oh, I see. It's a company called Food Should Taste Good. And there are all kinds of chips. Let me bring this into the house. I did have one that was like, had cheddar and something else. I think it's all, well, they're all gluten-free, and the company had sent me. Yeah, it's making noise, because I got to go from one room to the next here, and I'm not going to open it up now, because I'll talk about it next time. Yeah, Food Should Taste Good. That's the name of the company. So let me get back here to the room that has the back to the room with the computer. These poor people, they don't know what to do. Okay. Well, I'm waiting for the phone call to call in. Should I play? Let's see. Tell you what. Let me start. I'm going to play a song. I say a little prayer from Promises, Promises.
I opened up one of the bags of food that tastes good. Tortilla chips. Wait a minute. Oh, wow. Made with black, green, and Kalamata olives, garlic, and sea salt. Ooh. Wow. I'm going to have to make a dip for this. An avocado dip. I like avocado. Oh, yeah. This is good stuff. Let's see, what's in it? Aside from that. Oh, wow. The ingredients. Stone ground corn. Versus a stone turtle corn. Stern ground corn. High oleic sunflower oil. And or sunflower oil. I don't know what oleic. Is that that? What is that, that oil they were talking about? That's the. Well, okay. And then it says black olives, green olives, Kalamata olives. Corn bran, garlic powder, and sea salt. That's all that's in it. That's all that's in it, so it's not like a lot of stuff. Let's see. It also says, oh, yeah, for hummus. Okay, well, let's get back
ready for some football?
I think so. I think we're ready for some football. Melissa, are we ready for some football?
We're always ready, Mel.
Well, I'm eating some chips. I just got them. UPS just delivered some chips to me.
Oh.
I'm opening up a bag. Anyway, I introduce yourself to my audience. Go ahead.
Well, I'm Melissa Pickett. I play for the New York Sharks, number 74, and I play center. I've been playing for 3 years. This coming season will be my fourth. And I love it. Yeah.
Well, what we're going to talk about, so you were part of the five Shark players.
Yep.
That were made up of with the Team USA.
Right.
In the first International Football. What does IFAF stand for? I forgot. International Federation of American Football. No.
Right. I think that's it.
That sounds good enough. And so this was the first women's world championship.
Right.
And it was tackle football.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And you were one of the five on Team USA that brought home the gold medal.
I was fortunate enough to be one of the 45 chosen from across the country to play, and go overseas and play for the gold.
Now, I've been dying to know, this time you're playing tackle football, the only ones you've ever met, and just because we were vying for, against them, you only met basically all of the teams on this league, IWFL. So,
right. Yeah.
So this
It was just the five of us Sharks, and we knew maybe not personally, but we knew some of the girls knowing their faces and playing them for, so many years. We got real close, having to be together at training camp, and so it was really nice. We had no choice but to bond and make ourselves into one team instead of however many separate teams that we've been, before this experience.
And that must have been a kind of interesting, because this was, I have to say, the top 45 that could afford it.
Yeah.
So wasn't
Five. Yeah, it was the top 45 that had the means to go, meaning they had the time, they get time off from work and they could get the monetary resources, whether it be from donations or out of their own pocket.
So that in itself must have been an experience. What was the experience of, you're looking around and saying, wow, this is basically the top 45?
Well, it was, the one word that comes to mind is humbling. It was very, very humbling to be among women that are really the top of their game. It's impossible to go through an experience like that and be one of 45 of the best and not learn something, every day, every hour that you're with them. It was really great because you get so many different perspectives and the girls were really so willing to teach as well as listen to what you have to say and what you've learned from your experiences. It was really nice. It was a great exchange of ideas and techniques, and that was great. It was a huge melting pot of just, you know, women that love to play this game from across the country. It was cool.
Can you picture, let's say, that this Team USA playing, you know, being a team? Can you imagine?
You know, before the experience, I think it's safe to say that everyone was skeptical because, you know, you put 45 women in a tight space and you put them together for 2 weeks in any situation, that's a little scary. But it did seem impossible, I think, to everybody. I think I can speak for everybody on that. But then, surprisingly, by the end, it was just, I think we just felt really grateful to have, you know, people next to us, women next to us that were so welcoming and willing to gel as one team. We really had no choice because, in essence, you know, if you don't form into one team by the end of, or at least by the championship game, it could really hurt someone, you know, if you don't trust the person next to you. So, it was a matter of, if you want to say do or die, you know, not everybody knows how terrifying football can be if you do the wrong thing. But so it was really necessary for us to gel, but I think it got to a point where we really wanted to. You know, we enjoyed being with the person next to us. We weren't there because we had to be anymore, if that makes sense.
Do you think, were there any, like, well, I could, let's say, for instance, now, were there a few players from Boston, I believe?
Yeah, there were three players from Boston who, you know, of course, we saw in previous seasons, previous games. There were two from Pittsburgh, and we had one from...
That must have been
Boston.
Really interesting, and the ones with Boston having just been, like, I think, weren't they the only ones that defeated us this season?
Yes.
And
yes.
Now you got
our only loss was to Boston, yeah.
Now you got the players whose ass you wanted to kick before.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it is very interesting. Yeah, because you know, we just when we left for Texas, we had just beat Pittsburgh and knocked them out of the playoffs. So for me personally, I mean, I thought about what that might be like to have to talk to them after beating them on their home field, and that didn't happen for I think they said 20 games or some ridiculous record like that. So you know, you're skeptical, but it was kind of weird. but Boston, the three girls from Boston, they're great. They went on to the championship, so they had a whirlwind year, winning the gold and then the championship.
Oh, yeah. That must have been something for them. Yeah. And
so.
Then, so you practiced, like, it was like 2 weeks. And now, and all of a sudden now, you're also faced with a coach you've also never had before, too.
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, we had our head coach, John Tanicki, he's from Chicago, and then our defensive coordinator, Mr. Stone, he's also from Chicago, and then our coach, Matt, he's from Wisconsin. And then Coach Houston, she's from Sacramento. So, and then, you know, we had a staff, you know, that made us want for nothing. It was great. We didn't have to worry about anything but football. But, yeah, we all met them when we got down to training camp.
Wow. That must have been, that really must be, well, it, the thing, I guess, and I have to say on the, for us, I suppose, on the positive side, not going into any playoffs, there was nothing to think about in terms of
right.
coming home and having to
right.
deal with something.
Right, yeah.
So you could
really
be just totally open to this is it.
Right, yeah. No, for us, for the Sharks, you know, it was the end of our regular season before we even got to training camp. So, you know, the eye was literally on the goal because we knew there wouldn't be anything after that. And so, you know, the four teams that had to go forward, you know, after we came back from Sweden, they had to worry about, you know, the last round of playoffs and then the championship. So I'd imagine it was way harder for them.
Sure. Now let's get to at the games themselves. So there, sure. Now you get to meet women from like all over the world. This is like the
right.
Now you didn't participate in the flag. Did you participate in the flag game 2 years ago?
No, I didn't. I didn't. I like tackle way too much, so I haven't touched the flag at all.
So this is now. Is this now like the first time you've actually experienced women football players from other countries? Then,
right. That was my first experience. Yeah, and I before this I had never even been to Europe. So I really made sure that I took it all in. Yeah, it was my first time in international play.
So what was that experience about in terms of meeting women from other teams?
Well, you know, here I am, if I could give you a small view of what I was feeling. I know I'm meeting 44 of the best women in football from the United States. And I know that we have the most experience. We have an unlimited amount of talent. So I feel just lucky having met them. And then, you know, we fast forward through training camp, and, you know, we have to go overseas. We're formed as one team now. And now I get to meet women from other countries and learn how they do things outside of the U.S. and you know, it's American football. It's our game. It's the game we invented. So that's an interesting perspective because they look to us as, you know, the ultimate football players. And to see how they adapt and how they adjust to a game from another country, that was really cool. I mean, that was the best. They were just so willing to learn, and they were just in awe of our experience.
So that's why we were pretty much seated number one, because
right.
It's not as if, okay, things making a noise. Hang on.
I'm back, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so, did you have, so you had opportunities to talk to these women, what
yeah.
about the communication barriers because of, I mean, language barriers? Or did they,
well,
a lot of people
well,
know?
We had a trainer who served as our translator on the field, and then, you know, if we went out and into town or, you know, out into the capital city or if we were shopping and whatnot. So we had a trainer with us who's awesome. And then from each team, there were a few girls that spoke English from each of the teams. So they didn't even really need a translator because one of their players spoke enough that we could communicate that way.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't all that difficult, which was nice.
So even though, let's say, take, for instance, Austria. I mean, like, well, that was like
yeah.
the first game. But
yeah.
So even though the you were mingling with the teams that we defeated, they
yeah.
were still like saying, okay, you know, you won, and come on, let's chat anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think people would be really, really surprised how competitive we are on the field. And I mean, it's no holds bar on the field. I mean, it's like, we're out for war. You know, we want to win, and that's what we came. We went to Europe. We went to Sweden to win. We went through training camp to win. We we weathered all the hot weather, and we had our eyes set on the goal. But off the field, it was just like, I mean, I don't know how to explain it. We love football, so we automatically have that common bond.
Right.
And the practice over there is for the whole tournament. You know, if you played a game in the morning, you went back, you know, to your hotel, you showered, you came back and you watched the other games. It's just out of respect, and we wanted to be there. We wanted to see what the other teams had.
Oh, sure.
As far as talent. So we did that. Every day we did that. The other teams did that. We all had our flags. We all had our section up in the stands. And we were right next to each other, and we would chat it up. And, you know, it was broken English. And but
did it, yeah.
But it was really, really nice. It was really nice. Everybody was really interested to find out what things were like in the States, and we were interested too, because for some of these girls, football, you know, they've only been playing for maybe 3 years, 6 years. It hasn't been very long. So we had a lot to talk about, and we did. We did throughout the game. We would cheer for the other teams that were playing, and talk about our respective countries and what playing football is like there. So it was cool.
Do you think a lot of people got, you know, like people's, well, and not the phone numbers, but email addresses and stuff like that?
Yeah. I remember being at the championship game, and we were all on the field. We had just won the gold. We were all taking pictures. And finally it was time to just get back to the hotel and you know, get our showers and get dressed and go out and celebrate. And we were talking to the girls, and we realized at that moment that was the last game. We probably wouldn't see them again because they weren't in the same hotel as we were. So we just, you know, well, how are we going to talk? And the long distance thing, and you can't really call people because it's getting expensive. So we're using Facebook. We're on Facebook. We're all on Facebook. So the minute we got home, you know, I had probably somewhere between 25 and 30 friend requests. And you know, the day I got home, it was pretty nice. So so we all exchanged information, and that's how we talk.
Well, that's pretty good, because this way, you can all help each other, or just say,
right.
Well, not only help each other, but encourage.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it's cool because we get to relive the whole thing. We exchange pictures and video, and we comment on the pictures and video, and we have two or three teams represented in one picture. I mean, that's great. And everybody could see it, and we share them all, and we talk about what we're doing, or if we're still, if we're training in the off season and all that. So, I'm not sure that talking about football with some of the girls overseas will die anytime soon. It's pretty awesome still.
Wow. So that experience must have been very the whole thing must have been very rewarding for you.
Yeah.
Just all around, both football and just as a personal too.
I'm sorry, Meryl.
No,
I remember being at training camp, and one of our coaches, Coach Mack, he's from Wisconsin. He would just help us visualize and mentally just prepare for the game and what might come when we get to Sweden. And he would say to us, when you get back home, whether or not you win the gold, and of course we did, but he said, people are going to ask you to describe what happened. And so think about how you're going to describe this whole experience. And all of us said, there's just no way. There's no way to do it. You could try and try and try and even through pictures, I mean, there's no way to describe, and it's hard to not get emotional about it, but, it, you know, it's hard to tell the story and do it justice.
Well, it, you know, I'm getting left for you, having never gone to Europe. I mean, this is a combination of your experiencing people from other countries, and the combination of and all these people have that one thing in common.
Yeah.
With you.
Yeah.
At least that one thing in common, if not other things, let's say. But that.
Right.
And it's that really. I'm sure there must be something else. If one of these days, maybe I'll get enough information from people and write a book about the about the experiences. At least or do this like in photos or something. That would be a great idea.
Oh yeah.
To
that would
photos.
Be amazing. Yeah.
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 Now the other thing that I wanted to discuss is you got. I mean. Although the newspapers weren't at the airport, well, the media wasn't at the airport to meet you.
No, and, they weren't.
No.
No paparazzi.
No. However, you did get to go to the mayor's office.
We did.
Yeah. And tell, what was that like for you to be acknowledged now?
You know, the five sharks, the girls that, you know, went and had just gotten the gold, just came from overseas, had this great experience, were not really welcomed or greeted by the media when we got to the airport. Then, you know, about a month later, this just happened. You know, we got the invitation to go to City Hall and meet Mayor Michael Bloomberg. And, you know, all of us have only seen him on television, you know, and he's just, he's seen as this person that, he's the guy to meet in New York City. He runs things, and some people say that New York City is the capital of the world, you know, whether you think that's true or not, he's somebody that gets things done in New York, and to meet him and be a New York shark and represent the city. And then you're meeting the guy that runs the city. I mean, where do you go from there? Only to the White House, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true.
Right. So, so that was a really great experience.
And then we get to proclaim. He gets to proclaim August 9th, 2010 is New York Sharks Day too.
Right. Yeah, he declared a New York Sharks Day. So every year we'll get to remember meeting the mayor. But that was really nice. He was a nice guy. We chatted a lot about our jobs and what we do and where we live and football, of course. It was really nice. It was great.
So, in other words, it seems, well, whereas in the past we've gotten, like, when we've gotten, like, letters, because, you know, when any time the team does good, there's a certificate. you know, coming from some politician. But this is like what we see all the time is a certificate, which is nice. You know, you got a letter and there's a signature, but we never get to actually see that person. And
right.
This is probably one of the only times that we're actually seeing the person who's acknowledging the team.
Uh-huh.
So that was a great thing. And it's true. Where do we go from here, except the White House?
Right.
And I know you'll all be happy if you get something from Anthony Weiner or the senators and things like that.
Sure.
But it's like this is the one at home. This is the New York Sharks, New York City. And, this is probably, like, what the best acknowledgement and proclaiming a day.
It's great. It's great because you're right. It's not just a letter where his staff could, just stamp his name and put the seal on it and send it off. You know, he's taking time out of his day. So that's, you have to appreciate that. You have to, because that's some acknowledgement. It's not just paper. It's great.
Yeah. Well, I know because you don't live in New York City, you're not familiar with New York One, are you?
I mean, I've heard of it before, but I'm not as familiar as some of the girls that live in Manhattan are.
Well, New York One is a station, just like the New York City station.
Okay.
There is a man, Roger Clark, who was always into sports, and now he's a, I don't know if he does anchor, he does more. He does sports, he does more. I just wanted to let you know, and I haven't, it's like all of a sudden, I just got an email from him today. Merle,
okay.
What's doing, and can we get some New York Sharks on the TV show?
Oh, wow. Wow.
So I got to set that up.
That's great.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I realize, I know it's great, you know, if we get the Fox or whatever, but this is like the New York City station. So this will be kind of cool. I'm looking forward to this.
That would be great.
Yeah, perseverance. I keep, every time I call New York One, I go, and tell Roger Clark I call, please. As a hint. But anyway.
Set that up. I drive right in for you, Meryl.
Yeah. Well, okay, the show is going to end, so I don't want to have to. And thanks a whole bunch for sharing your experience with everybody. And, well, of course, we'll continue this.
I hope so.
Okay.
No, I had a great time, and thanks, I think, everybody for listening and hearing our story.
Okay. And have a great night, dear.
All right. Thanks, Meryl.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes, that was Melissa Pickett. And, we will try to continue with getting some of the other players. In the meantime, the next time you'll hear me is probably while I'm in Rochester, New York.